Is it something about police training that makes the deadly force encounter like the one between Geronimo Yanez and Philando Castile so plausible to some? A jury is supposed to reflect community standards in its verdicts. And perhaps one of those standards is an increasingly military notion of what police are supposed to do. Dan Grossman, a retired Army Ranger, he's also a West Point instructor and author, and he's a preeminent figure behind the warrior policing approach. He travels the country, lecturing to tens of thousands of police, military, and first responders.
A warrior fights violence. And what do they fight it with? Violence. Violence is your tool. Violence is your enemy. Violence is the realm you live in, and you must master it, or it will destroy you.
When writer Steve Featherstone set out to write an article for the New Republic about Grossman, he took along his father, a retired policeman from Syracuse, New York. It was an unforgettable experience for a father and son, and two rare and different windows for all of us on how to see policing.
I was really curious to see how my dad would receive Grossman's message and what he would think about it, because I think the eras of policing that my dad comes from, he became a cop in the early 60s and retired in the late 90s. So he saw like an era of policing that really is gone today. And I really was curious to see what my dad thought of that message.
Robert, what did you think?
I thought he provided a lot of good information, technical information, and also I think what he was trying to do was to emphasize to these people at the seminar that you have to be aware at all times on the job. You have to be well-trained. You have to be fair but firm when you're dealing with the public or with anybody, and in particular with certain suspects or situations. And you don't have the ability to second-guess or Monday morning quarterback a situation. You've got to take the appropriate action, not always to kill somebody. But
Robert, during your time as a police officer, did you ever encounter civilians on a call you believed that you were in war, that you believed you were on the front lines?
Oh, yeah, yes. I was working with my partner, Dean Bender, and we were down on a city street here in Syracuse, and it was a domestic problem. And we noticed a guy downstairs, and he was quite intoxicated, you know. So we had to go upstairs to find out what was going on. So we went up this narrow stairway, and as the door opened, we heard this click, click. When the door opened, there's a guy standing there with a 12-gauge shotgun, and he's got it about a foot and a half away from Dean's head. But fortunately, Dean just reached in and pushed up the barrel of the shotgun and started talking to the guy. And the guy realized it wasn't the guy he was mad at. It was the police.
Can I interrupt a second, John?
Sure.
That situation is really hard to imagine occurring today. And the guy with the shotgun on the other side of that door not being dead. And I'm not saying that cops today just kill everybody with a gun or just shoot down people needlessly. It's just that it seemed to me in all the anecdotes that my father was telling me, you know, before the seminar as we're driving down, that there was this preference to deal with people on a sort of one-to-one basis and not to overreact to what are clearly dangerous situations where, you know, increase the probability of somebody ending up dead. And I think what my opinion is that Grossman, what he teaches does increase that likelihood. The way cops are trained today over the past couple of decades has been, you know, it's heavily reliant on the fatal and the deadly encounter, sort of, you know, training for the worst case scenario. And that makes sense. I mean, this is we live in a violent culture. You know, there's a gun for every man, woman, and child in this country. At the same time, you know, a case like we saw, like the Sandra Bland case, right? No one died in that. No one was shot. But there's an example of where that kind of comply at all costs warrior mentality contributed to a tragic outcome.
Well, I believe Grossman's correct, and he's doing a great service for the police department and the community. He's trying to train and teach people that if you do have to use deadly physical force, then you have to do it, and you can't feel guilty about it later because that's your job. And you did the right thing based on what you observed or what you saw and what results needed to be taken.
Robert, do you think that you have to use a different part of your training if you're policing in a white community than if you're policing in a black community, that it takes a different kind of outlook to be effective?
Not at all. I mean, we don't have a special training for officers in the black community or the white community. As a matter of fact, as the first few years on a force, you might be working today in the black community, tomorrow in the white community, and et cetera, et cetera. This is all a figment of people's imagination, that policemen treat black people different than they do white people or whatever. There's only one kind of people we deal with, and that's the person we're dealing with right now. And he can be a good guy, he can be a jerk or whatever.
Well, Steve, I don't want to put you on the spot with your dad.
Sure.
But is, in our day and age, is what he's talking about incomplete, do you think?
Yeah, no, I think it is, only because my dad's very much an individualist, and I tend to look at things in terms of more contextual. For instance, I would say, you know, racism, racial bias, implicit bias is sort of baked into the system. I mean, it's baked into our criminal justice system. So on an individual basis, no doubt the vast majority of cops, you could even say all cops, let's say every single one of them are, as individuals, not racist. But if you're working it in a system that has implicit bias baked into it, you are going to be in some part enforcing a racially biased system. It's impossible not to. I agree. I think my dad is definitely someone who is very fair-minded, but I think he's probably – the thing that struck me most, I think, from when we got home, and I asked him, so, you know, what did you think – do you think this kind of training would be good for all cops? And what was your response, Dad? Do you remember?
I was impressed with the training, and I thought that this training probably would be great for SWAT teams – possibly your investigators, because they have to respond to some critical situations. Might not be necessary for the beat cop, the rookie beat cop. Might be a great tool for the more experienced officer that could understand after some on-job training what Mr. Grossman was coming across with. It's not the most important part of your training, but it's certainly a life-saving aspect if you're going to survive in today's culture, because there's so many knotheads out there that think nothing of killing people, not just policemen. I mean, they just go out and kill people on the street to see how it feels. It's really ridiculous.
That's Robert Featherstone, a retired Syracuse police officer, along with his son, Steve Featherstone, a writer.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.